From the heart of the Forest City, focusing on the biggest stories in London, this is the Craig Needles Podcast. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Yes, it is the Craig Needles Podcast at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and wherever you get your podcast. The Craig Needles Podcast is brought to you by our very good friends over at the Covent Garden Market and at downtown London. And to join us on the podcast today, I talked about the idea on Friday, and it's come to fruition. Everyone's scheduled, lined up. Susan Stevenson, the counselor for Ward 4, sitting across from me here at our Richmond studios today, despite the fact that there was some confusion as far as where we were going to be, which was my fault. Susan, thank you so much for being here with us today.
No, my pleasure.
So, look, there's a lot going on. And I talked about this a little bit with Jen Dunn, who's the executive director of the London Views Women's Centre, when she was on the podcast on Friday. And I said that I wanted to give you a chance to come on and share your side of things. And like I said, it worked out timing-wise. So I've got to ask you about this. In the last couple of week and a bit here, there's been runs on Twitter from your account at London Bees Women's Center, at Innova, at Safe Space. We're talking about safer supply stuff. We're talking about what's going on with homelessness, things going on in Old East Village. Why is this the approach, is I guess, question one? Why is that the way that you want to go about sort of starting these conversations?
Well, I would say that I haven't been going at anybody. Mm-hmm. I've been going at the issues, okay, at the concerns, at the questions that residents have. Certainly, so I think that's a distinction that gets to be made.
That's fair.
And why social media? Well, there hasn't been the opportunity to engage on council floor or on committee floor the way I would like, right? Since I've been in, they've limited, even at committee, we're limited to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so that's just not enough time to talk about the issues that we have. Plus, there's not a lot of time between committee and council. Then it's a decided matter of council and it's done.
Right.
So the people that I'm speaking to, the residents, they have a lot of concerns about their city and what's happening in it and what's not happening. And social media can be a great way to engage with people, get dialogue, get conversation happening around the issues so that people have the information. You know, in the information age, it can be hard to get information about what our city is doing, the reasons why the choices are being made and why some things aren't happening.
If I were to say it comes off as deliberately provocative, though, would you disagree with that?
It's deliberate. Mm-hmm. It's not deliberately provocative.
Okay.
I'm not sure why talking about the issues gets the response that it does. And there's a lot of straw man argument stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I think there are some responses to some things that you say that accuse you of saying things that you're not. I think that's not unreasonable.
Yeah, and I think there's an avoidance of talking about the issues. And I'm not sure why, because if we're grounded in what we're doing and why, there should be no problem in communicating it. But there's people do not seem to want to discuss the issues. They don't seem to want to clarify their stance, show their numbers, talk about the projections, be held accountable. And that's not what I'm about.
So social media then, and you say that there may not necessarily be time on council floor. What about going and having a conversation with Jenna Rosanz over at Safe Space or Jesse Roger at Innova? I know you're going to be talking with Jennifer Dunn at Locke. Why not have those conversations sort of on the one-to-one as opposed to doing this online then?
First of all, I've never turned down an invitation. So okay, all of this, oh, I don't meet or I don't talk. If it's some sarcastic comment on Twitter, I didn't pick up on it. Even if it's an ask on Twitter, you know where to reach me, my cell, mm-hmm, phone, my email. If there's a request for a conversation, I'm more
so
than happy to have it.
So someone from those organizations, and Jen said it on the podcast last week, if they want to sit down and have a talk with you about what's going on there, you're in?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've never said no. Anytime I've been invited, I've said yes. So there is that. And the other part is, and I've forgotten what the question was.
Oh, just about why do this on social media as opposed to having sort of one-on-ones with organizations you have concerns about or whatever.
Well,
it is.
My issue isn't with the organizations necessarily. Okay. It's with the city, right? Like what Safe Space is about, what they choose to do is all fine. Whether they have access to the public purse is a different story, right? What our contract holds them to, what we're asking of them, what oversight we have, what the costs are, that's... But mm-hmm, my issues with, honestly, with city administration and with council around the direction, once they have, like, it's not what these organizations are doing. It's the fact that the city is engaging with them.
Okay.
Right? Because if they want to run and get private donations and do what they want to do, that's fine. That's fine with me.
What issue do you have as to what's going on? We'll use Safe Space as an example first, but I know there's other organizations. What issue do you have as to what's going on with Safe Space and the city funding that's going on there?
Well, first of all, right from the very beginning, it came to us. I heard about it from residents that Safe Space was moving in on Old East Village. I mm-hmm. didn't hear about it from city staff.
Right.
Okay. So that's problem number one. It's happening in my ward, funded by the city.
And you and I have talked before, over-concentration of social services in Old East Village is a legitimate problem. And I think that's entirely fair to point out. But is it?
Because city council just looks at me like I have three heads every time I bring it up.
Right.
Right? It was in the core area action plan.
Mm-hmm. And it was in the hubs plan too.
And it was ticked off as completed by updating the 88-page help in hard times booklet. That's a disservice, I think, and it was a lack of accountability in terms of saying that that was completed. Our core area action plan, $10 million, and we said we're what percentage complete? Mm-hmm. I really have a problem with it. Are we ticking things off just to say we're done? Or are we actually committed to solving the problems? Are we willing to look and say this worked, this didn't work, this is what we learned, this is what's next? So with Safe Space, I found about it from residents who were concerned. I was told to my face by city staff it would only be 4 months. It was an emergency response. It was winter. Women needed shelter. I said, fine. But it wasn't 4 months. It went on longer in that location. The funding was for 12 months, but they told me that the location was only for four.
Mm-hmm. So isn't that like, and I get that you would say that you're taking, your disagreement here is with staff, but Safe Space sort of being caught in the middle of a dispute between you and staff, is that fair to them?
Life's not fair. Half the stuff that happens to me isn't fair. I think an organization, if you look at the city documents, and I could be wrong, but I don't think there's a city document that says shelter for sex workers. It says women's shelter. It says 24/7. Now, they can say they weren't funded for that, whatever. All I know is what came to council, what was given to me by the city manager, said that they were contracting for 24/7.
Okay.
My issues are with the contracts that we're writing. What are we holding people accountable to? What are the services that are being provided? And my concern is with those vulnerable women. So it's so interestingly that when I ask about questions, how are we keeping them safe? You know what I mean? What are we doing to protect them? That gets me a letter, and I heard Jen say, why go to social media, which I find very ironic given the letter that she wrote that went on social media and in the news with no contact to me. You would think you would call a counselor and say, hey, let me set this straight for you. You got nothing to be worried about. This is what we're doing. This is why we do it. I'm happy to educate you on that, but it wasn't. It was a letter written to the wrong integrity commissioner, asking the council to evaluate my ability to represent my ward, which is a ridiculous comment. It reflects really poorly, I think, on that organization and the leadership. And I don't mean to be too mean, but this is an organization that's there to protect and support women in crisis. And that's how they treat a duly elected female leader on city council.
So your wish is that before that letter came out, and this is in regards to your integrity commissioner complaint, or it might even be before that, but your wish is that she had come to you and talked to you about that before that sort of went public. And that wasn't just posted to social media. I believe it was sent to the council agenda and then wound up on social media as well. But
Oh, no, I think it was there right away.
Oh, okay. I think it might have been both simultaneously. But
yes,
either way,
of course. Yeah, I would always rather people reach out to me. But I just find it a little ironic that after doing that, then there's a complaint that I'm posting on social media. I mean, it's interesting. And again, she can do whatever she wants. But I think it reflects poorly.
And we can get into that a little bit. I want to ask you just about what's going on in Old East Village right now. We mentioned over-concentration on social services, which again, I think is absolutely a fair thing to point out in Old East Village right now. What is your hope? What do you want to see happen here? That's the question that I come away with from a lot of this with is, what does she want to have occur? What is your end goal with some of this stuff?
Well, my end goal is that people get the help that they need, right? Right now, we're spending a lot of time and a lot of money, and we're not helping anybody. The people on the streets aren't getting what they need. The people in the businesses are barely hanging on, and the community is in despair.
Right. I agree.
So
I think these are all problems. How do we combat this, I guess?
Well, I would love to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. I'm not invited to the whole of community response table. And I represent the people, all of those people. And all of them are calling me crying. All of them. The more I'm in the news, the more I get calls from people within shelters, working in shelters, people very unhappy with what they're seeing. And I'm supposed to just be quiet about that? I'm supposed to just vote no on council floor and then say that I did the best that I could? I'm coming up on halfway through my term, mm-hmm. and I said, I am not doing this to position myself for 2026. I want to be able to hold my head up at the end of this term and say that I did and said what I needed to say and do as a representative of the people of Ward 4. And that's what I'm going to do. And if it upsets people along the way, that wasn't my intention. And if that's what happens, that's what happens, because we get to talk about these hard topics.
And these are very, very hard topics. This, though, where I come at this, though, is there is clearly a very, very significant problem here, not just in Old East Village, but all over London when it comes to homelessness, when it comes to addiction, when it comes to mental health. All these things are huge problems. And you didn't like some of the hub plans, which, fair enough. I just need to know, and it, not necessarily on you, but like what should we be doing that we are not doing, I guess, is my question.
We should encourage recovery.
Okay.
We should encourage treatment. That doesn't mean that we don't treat people if they're not. That doesn't right. mean that we shame people if they're not, but that we encourage them and have them see hope that there is a better day ahead, and we encourage that. And currently the model is treatment or no treatment. One is not preferred over the other. To imply treatment or is to stigmatize. Well, I disagree with that. I think people deserve better than that. I do believe they can recover. Now, you can say it's healthcare. Mm-hmm. Fine. So teaching people how to smoke instead of shoot up, teaching, you know, handing people foil, that's not healthcare. So what we need, we don't have any sober housing or recovery spaces in shelters where people can go who either aren't addicted to drugs mm-hmm. or are in a space of recovery and don't want to be near it.
And I agree with you entirely on that, is that there should be some sort of sober spot. Because if you have been battling addiction in your life and you go to a place and this is where you're going to live, where there are a whole lot of people who are using drugs, that is not conducive
no.
to being able to beat your addiction.
So why do we not have that?
Why do we not have shelter spaces?
And we yep. have people with lived experience that have been talking about that, mm-hmm. who share yep. that, and it seems to fall on deaf ears. Councillor Pribble and I brought up three times on at council trying to look at recovery yep. housing, sober housing, and it was shot down for a myriad of reasons which were not logical.
Let's look at the reasons then, because there has to be someone who's willing to run the sober one, of course. And, you know, the plan was to do what, like 12 of these hubs, maybe a few more than that, depending on what's going on. So I understand how maybe the sober one wasn't in the first batch that we were to pull out of the oven. You know what I mean? So I get that too. But I think that there should be plans, and I think that we should be trying to ask for RFPs for a sober one or whatever it happens to be. I don't think that's unreasonable to say at all.
I don't think so either. And what about mm-hmm. our shelter spaces? There can't be a place where people can go. I spent 2 hours talking to people along the river, mm-hmm. and I didn't see evidence of drug use. There may be, but it wasn't like it is on Dundas East.
No.
So are we actually, do we have people who don't want to be there near the drugs being forced out of the downtown because they don't want to be subjected to all that mm-hmm. is there? And one of the reasons why I was told it was important to have that shelter for sex workers was because it wasn't safe for them in the regular shelters. Mm-hmm. But you've located it on what is in essence a very unsafe area.
No.
And you're not open 24/7. So where do those women go when they're not open?
So here's the question about 24/7. You mentioned it. The safe space folks would say, hey, look, like we want to be open 24/7, but we just simply don't have the dollars in order to make that happen. Now, whether that was something that was promised or whether that was something that was perhaps put into a council motion that shouldn't have been there by staff, whatever. I don't know exactly who wrote what motions where. But what I do know is they would say, we would love to be open 24/7. We just don't have the cash in order to make that happen. Are you interested in getting the cash to make that happen?
Well, I need a lot of answers in regards to funding that particular shelter before I would say that. But I do believe we should have 24/7. Anything that is open should be 24/7.
Okay.
And that's why I supported all of the cold weather beds. And I asked that the locations where we had day space that we offer night, because what were we doing? We went ahead and funded all kinds of day space without the night space. How fair is that?
I think day space funding is coming up at the end of May, right?
I don't know whether there'll be a request for renewed funding, but their funding does end the end of May.
Are you open to it?
Not in that location.
Okay.
And like I said, unless I get the questions to my the answers to my questions regarding the safety of the women in that shelter and around it, then no.
What questions do you have about the safety? Is it just a matter of, hey, there's a lot of drug use in this area and there's a lot of nefarious people? Let's be honest, there are nefarious people in that area who might want to take advantage of these women. And that's part of what's going on with sex work here. We don't have to beat around the bush. Sex work does have dangerous elements to it. There's no way around that. So are those the types of questions we're asking here? What are the questions that you want answered about safe space in that area?
Well, I would like to know, when we talk about the safe London for women and girls, what is the city's stance on sex work? Because you've got Jennifer Dunn, she said I misquoted her or I used it out of context, but I've read several articles where she has said the current laws are the right way to go and decriminalization would not be safe for women. But then you've got Inova saying they support decriminalization of it. And you've got safe spaces. So what is safe or not? You don't get to choose both sides of the argument and be a leader in the area.
I think that they would have some disagreement there as far as what the right thing to do is. And I think that's fine.
And I think it's fine too. But what's the city's stance? Because again, we don't get to pick both sides and be leaders.
Right. But the city, I suppose, has to work within the framework of the laws that are on the books in Canada right now. So you're on board with the laws that are on the books in Canada right now as far as sex work goes?
According to drug use. But in both cases, we are supporting organizations that specifically advocate for the decriminalization of it. And we're supporting women in offering sexual services at Safe Space.
But so do you think that if Inova or Safe Space advocates decriminalization of sex work, which to be clear, I think is a very, very complicated debate. But if they're advocating that, that means that the work they do is somehow counterfeit and the city shouldn't fund them. Is that your take on this?
What is the city's stance on what is safe, what creates a safe London for women and girls? And we should be grounded in that and why we choose that. Those laws were just upheld by the Supreme Court in Ontario in September. And if we are going to, you just had London Cares in the news saying astonishing results, and some of them were women exiting the sex trade. So is that a goal? If it's a goal, why are we supporting women who are homeless and addicted in offering street-level sex work?
Are we supporting them in offering street-level sex work, or are we giving them a place to sleep? What are we doing at those places, at Inova or at Safe Space?
Okay, so that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. What are we doing at Safe Space? They run a bad date line?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Okay. What is wrong with that? What happens when
if someone's having trouble and they've been with a John or whatever? Shouldn't there be a place for them to call?
So I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking about fully taxpayer funded. That shelter is fully taxpayer funded.
Mm-hmm.
So my questions were on the council floor, to which the response was questioning my ability to represent my ward, is I just have questions about that. What happens if a John is arrested and he says, well, the woman was supported in offering this service from a taxpayer-funded shelter? What happens if a woman gets hurt and the shelter that we're funding is operating that bad dateline?
I think that a woman getting hurt means that it's good that the bad dateline is there. So she can call and say, hey, look, this is a problem. This is a guy who is an issue. Let's have that out there. And here's the thing. If London police want to go find the guy because he's obviously broken the law, because the law right now says you're not allowed to pay for sexual services, yeah, that's fine. You can get arrested for that. That's what the law says. But hey, here are guys that you shouldn't deal with is probably not a bad resource for women who are doing this.
Okay, so again, the question isn't whether they should offer the bad dateline. I believe they did prior to receiving city funding.
Right.
The question is, what is creating a safe London for women and girls? You've got a corner of a business district, Old East Village, mm-hmm. where you've got a shelter that is supporting women and offering the sexual services. Okay, so it's not giving them shelter and food and whatever else it is they need so that they don't need to be active in the sex trade. They're actually promoting it, empowering them, right? That's what their website says, is empowering women who provide sexual services to operate with safety and dignity. These are homeless, addicted women. How do you fulfill that mandate? How do you do it with safety and dignity? What is the plan? What is it that we're funding? When their website says donation list is lingerie and makeup and all this kind of stuff, is this in line with a safe London for women and girls? If it is, I'm open to that. Just explain it to me so that I can explain it to others. Because I've got women in that area who don't feel safe. They're being approached for sexual services. They don't feel safe with the people driving around looking for that. And there's a lot of condoms and other things that are around the area. I'm a little confused as a woman in the city of London how we have everybody cheering when we revoke a license for a body parlor, and we're all united in the fact that paid sex work increases sexual exploitation of women. It doesn't help create safety. And then we say, oh, but we're going to support these women to do it on the street. Like, if you believe, like, people can believe different things. And if you believe sex work is real work and you believe women should be able to do what they want with their bodies, fine. But then be consistent or explain to me why it's bad in the body rub parlor and good on the street.
I guess there are going to be varying experiences there. And I'm not an expert. I've interviewed many people about this before. And there are going to be people who would say, yes, there are some women who have awful experiences within sex work and some people who have fine experiences doing sex work.
Yeah.
And I guess Safe Space would say we want to eliminate the awful and have the fine experiences. I just think that we're never going to have zero sex work getting done.
And I'm not talking about that. I am talking about, see, we get into all the details of it. I'm talking about whether it should be taxpayer funded.
Okay.
When we have limited resources, we need to allocate that money to what? To create a safe London for women and girls, where should we be allocating that money? That's what I want to know. I'm open to the input from others. I think it's a reasonable question to say, why choose this? We do not have a homeless shelter for women. We do not. There's all kinds of women on the street, outside Safe Space, along Dundas Street. It's heartbreaking. Why do we not have one for women that has a door that's open where people can walk in and get shelter? So if this is the priority, explain it to me.
Right. Well, we just passed a 4-year budget. Mm-hmm. A shelter for women wasn't in there.
It was not.
Did you come forward with an idea saying, hey, let's see what we can do to scrape together a few bucks to find a shelter for women for the next 4 years? Is that a
conversation you had? Craig, we have not been asked for ideas. We've not been at the table as counselors.
You can put a motion on the floor and see what happens.
I put a motion for sober recovery housing and it got defeated because mm-hmm. people didn't know what it was and it's healthcare and all these kind of reasons that just make sure that it gets taken off. So one of the things we're forgetting too is all of this came out of the hunger strike. So we had people on the front lawn of City Hall mm-hmm. in the summer of 2022 saying, enough with the excuses, people are dying.
Yep.
Those people have more excuses. Those people.
Who are those people?
Well, sorry. Jenna Sands, for one. She was on the front lawn.
She was part of that.
And I hear nothing but excuses about the reason why Safe Space is not operating the way that.
So, what excuse? Like, I don't know if I would call. Hey, we receive X number of dollars, and we need Y number of dollars in order to provide this service. I don't know if excuses though.
Craig, that all came out. The city handed over to the community that whole response for that year. They were the ones. You guys are the experts. Here you go. You tell us what you need, and you've got the $5 million. We gave them, it was done under delegated status, gave them what they asked for. And then they say it's not enough. Look at London Cares. They said 7 days a week, 12 hours a day service. They offered 5 days a week, six hours a day. That's 36% of what they said they were going to offer. We had cold weather alert beds that just didn't get used. We had cold weather beds that didn't happen. I don't think we reflected on that winter response to see how well they did. When I did the numbers, it wasn't good. And yet they continue to be leaders, experts that we're unable to question. We just had the Ford government say they're not taking the opinion of the chief medical officer of health. The chief medical officer of health said Ontario should go the BC route. We should decriminalize drugs and we should increase safer supply. And the Ford government said, respected, educated man, we're not taking his opinion. So we have experts telling us what is needed.
BC is backing up the truck on that particular issue.
But we're all talking within a month.
Yeah.
Right? No. What happened in Ontario is still in the same month. It's April. So we had a chief medical officer of health, whom a lot of the people that are leading this support that. That is the experts that London is listening to, from what I can see, agree with the chief medical officer of health. In the highly supportive housing, it said that a harm in the harm reduction was the criminalization, the current laws, that it is that supporting decriminalization is a harm reduction thing. It's right embedded right in the philosophy of the highly supportive housing. So we have created a whole of community response that has a philosophy that is supported by the experts, but I'm not so sure it's supported by the people of London. Okay. And I'm not even so sure it's supported by those that they're trying to help.
I would agree with that entirely, that there are a lot of people who are sleeping rough or have precarious housing right now that look at the strategy and say, hey, there isn't a lot here for me. I've talked to them. I've talked to them on my way to and from my office where I am right now because I walk through the downtown core every day. I've had conversations with these folks. I would agree with that entirely.
It's heartbreaking. So people say, well, why are you going to social media? Well, where do I go? Where do I go to say there's people hurting and we need to do something different? We need to have hard conversations. We just approved the emergency shelter stability of that sector for 2 years. It had almost a 40% increase in costs with no increase in beds. What is that whole of community? What are those experts doing to meet the needs, the desperate needs of the 2,000 people that are outside?
Some of that, of course, is stuff costs more now than it would have before, but...
Okay, but what? Yeah. We can't do better? That's the thing, is we cannot do better?
And I think let's try to do as well as we possibly can because there are a whole lot of people that need the help. Is definitely...
That wasn't okay on the front lawn of City Hall.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I agree. No more excuses. What are we doing about these people? There are things that we can do to help. And when are we going to take that on and commit to it and get it done?
So when... When you say there are things we can do to help, what are some short-term things that you'd like to see happen soon in this realm?
Well, if it were me, I think we have to talk fundamentals. Okay. Are we committed to helping people or just putting them indoors? Because right now we're bringing the street culture inside and we've got all the damages and the destruction and the death.
Step one of helping people, getting them a place to sleep, though?
But is there a step two?
Yeah.
What is step two? We couch it in all this language, wraparound services. It sounds really good. What is it? What are we doing? Where are people a year later?
I would think that the hope would be that they have a more stable place to sleep. But obviously, we have a housing shortage, and that's part of the issue going on here as well. And you know, I've talked about this before, and I know you're with me on this. We've got a situation where OW and ODSP are just simply not nearly enough for folks that need the help here.
Yeah, it is. But one of the things we're not talking about, too, is most of the people on our streets have access to that same amount of money.
Mm-hmm. And they're on the street for that reason. They can't afford rent because OW and ODSP don't cover it.
Well, yes, but people get the same shelter allowance, right?
Yeah.
So the people living on our streets are living off the same disposable income as our seniors and disabled people that are housed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But So the difference between these situations in a lot of cases could be luck, really, because there just isn't a lot of housing that's available for that amount of money. And we have a housing shortage in general that's impacting everybody.
I agree.
Right?
I agree. But stay with me on that.
Mm-hmm.
The disabled senior, you know, Ontario works person who's living in social housing has X amount to spend a month.
Sure.
So does that homeless person has the same amount.
Yeah.
And the people that are in the social housing, as we put people who have often case in behaviors and stuff that are destructive to themselves and to others, as we put them into the social housing units, we create a lack of safety for those vulnerable people. When we allow open drug use and destructive behaviors outside of the meal service, I've got phone calls from seniors and people who need access to those meals who don't feel safe going to get it. Maybe they're on methadone. Maybe they're in recovery and they don't want to walk through open drug use to get there. But we're not talking about that. Everything centers around these people who use drugs and how they deserve housing and they deserve
I think everyone
to stay alive another day. Yeah. No one's going to disagree with that. Yeah. But is that our goal? Just to keep people alive for another day?
I think that you've got to start somewhere, essentially.
I disagree.
Okay.
You know, if we're not even going to hold as a goal people getting their lives back or creating better lives, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, but if day one of, okay, so I'm living on the street and I'm using drugs and I'm having a hard time, the easiest problem to solve of these is I'm living on the street. So you solve that one first, and then you can maybe think about the drug addiction or the
mental
health
issues. But is that what we're
going
to do? Just pick the easy thing? The low-hanging fruit?
I think that
it's not been working, Craig. It's not been working. Look, we had the LMCH people come and say, stop putting these people in the social housing.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So instead, we're going to build new buildings to put them in. But it wasn't working. What do you think is going to be different in these other buildings? And it creates a lack of safety for the others.
So we need more addiction recovery beds, I guess, is what you're saying here. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Where's the province on that? Because that's them, right?
Well, is it? We have detox beds here. Where do people go after they come out after 7 to 10 days of detox?
Probably back to wherever it is they were in most cases.
Yeah. So what are we doing? What is the, again, I think it's a, when you say, what do I want? I think we need to talk about the fundamentals. What is a safe London? What is a safe London for women and girls? What is it that we're creating? Because if all we're doing is moving the street culture inside, we end up with all kinds of damages, all kinds of safety concerns. I don't think that's what we want.
I think there are some people, a lot of people who are living on the street right now who pose no threat for damage,
absolutely,
safety concerns, things along those lines.
But they're at risk on the street of all those things.
That's fair.
Right, but then you're going to put them into a building that has people who are a problem?
Yeah.
They would rather be out by the river.
So, and that's the thing. There are a lot of people who'd say, I'd rather be up by the river for a variety of reasons.
So our strategic plan, I'm pretty sure we said we wanted to improve the safety of the shelters.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about that. How are we improving the safety of the shelters? We have all those beds and we hear about all of the concerns and how people don't want to go there because they're not safe. What are we doing about that?
So here's my question on that then. Are there not, can you not put together a motion, a counselor, talk to staff about, hey, what can we do about this, and talk to some of your colleagues? Is it just a matter of you don't think your colleagues are going to want to go along with it, so you don't do it? Or what, you know, you as a counselor, you could put together motions or plans in order to address some of this. So why is that not sort of part of what you've wanted to do here, what you've...
There has been no interest, no reception. So and it's one of the reasons
if you don't have
why
a seconder,
I...
Then yeah, but...
I usually have Councillor Pribble.
Okay.
But it doesn't... I have, behind the scenes, had several conversations. I have asked. There's been no interest at Council. So that's one of the reasons when you say, why the change over the last week? It is my... The only way I can see forward now is to reach out to the people to help educate people on what's happening. And if everybody's for it, then fine. But if they're not, then maybe it's time for the people to speak up so that council will change direction. And either is fine. We deserve clarity in terms of the direction that the city's heading, what our goals and outcomes are, and is it what the the residents of London want? And having that open dialogue, I think, is helpful, whether it's around sex work, whether it's around drug use, whether it's around where the shelters go and NIMBY things. Mm-hmm. We need to have the conversations.
Yeah. I think conversations are fine. There are some things that you've started conversations with that I agree with. And you posted the pictures of the family that finds the crack pipe where their kids play. Yeah, that's a real problem. And look, I've gone to parks with my kids, and my son's actually turning 5 today, and my daughter's 6. And when happy birthday, Peyton. But when we found syringes there, that's not fun. So I call the line and whatever, and that's a real issue. I just don't know what we can do to solve that other than...
We can get people the help they need.
And
deserve.
Some people don't want the help.
Absolutely not. But there are lots of people... So we're not talking about forcing. Yeah, so this is where we go to the straw man thing.
Fair enough.
There are lots of people on our street who do want help.
I agree.
Let's help those.
I agree.
And oftentimes, and we're all human, we're all the same way, there'll be a day where we've just had enough and we want something different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss that day, the next day you're like, you know what, I'm fine again.
Right.
So how about that plan? Outreach where we go out and we're like, is today the day you want help? Is today the day you want help? And the minute they say yes, we scoop them up and we have a pathway for them.
Some of that's got to be
long term.
Some of that's got to be on the province though, right?
As far as,
well, I do just because the
we have detox beds here.
Yeah, but funding large scale addictions recovery is just not something we're going to be able to do off the property tax base, I don't think. I think that's got
to
be...
Well, we're committing to highly supportive housing on the taxpayer base.
Yeah, that's not going to be as large scale as you would need to really make a difference as far as the
detail. It's $100,000 a year per bed for that highly supportive housing. Doing what exactly? I'm not sure.
Okay.
Right? I just went to a teen challenge function on Friday night. They do 12-month residential treatment for $56,000 a year per person. People come up with $1,000, they put it down, and they fundraise the other $55,000 because they know that most people in addiction, by the time they go to get help, have tapped themselves out and everybody who loves them.
Right.
So it's a beautiful thing. So think about that, $56,000 a year for 12-month residential treatment, and we pay, what, $36,000 a year to put people in a congregate shelter with no support. Could we not learn something? Could we not do something? I was in Kitchener-Waterloo on Friday at the Herb Street shelter. 50 tiny homes and a community house in the middle, $2.5 built in 4 months.
So you'd be supportive of finding $2.5 million to do something like that here?
Can we have those conversations?
I think that sounds great to me.
What we're doing isn't working. I'm just totally shocked at how the people who said, I don't know why we got rid of all the trailers, but do recall it was something like people deserve actual housing, right. Not that. And yet now we're supporting tents.
Right. And I agree with that. The trailer thing was a mistake. I agree with that entirely.
But now we're going to do tents?
Yeah. Oh, no. It was a mistake to get rid of the trailers.
Okay. Yeah.
We're on the same page there.
Yeah. So, but we can't seem to have these conversations, and things come to council late. And so, and then it's like,
that's
well, you don't have any time to talk about it because there's an emergency.
Right.
Well, why a year and a half?
Why can't we talk about winter response for 2024, 2025 here in April of 2024?
Yes, that's what I would like.
I think that sounds great to me, and we should do that.
And it's one of the reasons I started talking about the encampment strategy on Twitter, is to get that conversation going, because it says it was coming to us in June. Well, June is too late. Yep. I want the public to be engaged. Now, in the news article, it did say that there was going to be community engagement in May. That would be a beautiful thing. People really care.
I agree.
They care about the people whose lives are in a tragic situation, and they care about their own public safety and the survival of their small businesses that they love. Mm-hmm. All of those things are in jeopardy. When I went to the Teen Challenge Gala, they talked testimonial after testimonial about how their lives were saved. And what really I had trouble with is the fact that we talk about lives saved as a naloxone. Well, we need different languaging, because a life saved in a 12-month residential treatment of somebody who was addicted and out of control and now has, is going to school, has a job, has their life back, their family has their loved one back. compared to saving lives with naloxone. Not to say that we're not want to give out naloxone. Nobody wants to see anybody die of an overdose.
Right.
But tell me that's not the plan. Because I talked to first responders who've given somebody naloxone, the same person, three times in one day.
Yeah, that's not what you want to do.
So where? What is the plan? What is the outcome to take people to back to the life that they had or into a totally different life that is their best life?
Yeah.
And it's not provincial and it's not, it doesn't need to be. We should be doing better here as a city. And then would we possibly get more money from the province? What if
so.
We were more accountable in showing them where their money went? Would we be more likely to get funding?
I would hope so.
If we were in line with what the provincial government wanted, because when I went to the Recovery Capital Conference, the Minister Tobolo was there. He and the mental health and addiction minister from Saskatchewan and Alberta had a press conference and said those three provinces were committed to recovery-oriented care. We have a province that said no to the chief medical health officer, that said we are with the Alberta model of recovery-oriented systems of care. Why doesn't London get on board with that? Are we not more likely to get funding if we were aligned? Are we not more likely to have an addiction treatment center put here if we had recovery-oriented housing, a waiting spot for treatment, and a spot to go to for the long-term walkout that recovery is?
So I think that having a recovery-oriented housing and the long-term plans for recovery is great. But if we're going to do a dozen hubs, let's just say that's what it's going to be. I hope we can find the funding for a dozen hubs. We'll see. They can't all be sober hubs, though, because there's people that are going to be just in a space where they're not able to commit to that path of recovery for whatever reason. There's all sorts of reasons that may be the case. So
yeah,
are you? Does that mean that you're opposed to any hub that doesn't that isn't a sober hub, is I guess my
no question. I am not I'm not opposed to anything that's not a sober housing. What I want is a philosophy of care, recovery oriented. It doesn't say recovery mandated, recovery oriented, that everything that we're doing for these people orients them towards recovery.
Right.
That we are encouraging it, that we are modeling it, that we are, you know, we've got that lived experience guiding us. I don't think that's where we're at in London, Ontario. And I think that it's all hidden under this nice language that has us thinking that people are getting care that I don't think that they're getting.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, let's get clarity so that we can all be on board with this. And if I'm right, then let Londoners choose. Is that what they want?
You mentioned what's gone on this week, and some of the things that have gone on this week would be, you know, a couple pictures of encampments and things along those lines. This is not the same as the ones from September of last year. There weren't people who were directly visible in these photos, no one identifiable. But you did post photos of encampments, and it had people bring back what happened with the issue surrounding the Integrity Commissioner complaint. Was there any consideration that you had for not doing that, given sort of what happened with September? And then, again, I know that you dispute the Integrity Commissioner process, and that's fine. But still, there were some people clearly that were left very upset. Some of them who I would classify as supporters of yours left very upset by what happened with those photos in September of last year. Was there any thought of just not doing photos like that?
No.
No. Okay.
No, because I have a cause. I'm here on a mission and a purpose to help these people, to help the people who are on our streets, to help the businesses and that community. And I'm not going to be bullied into silence. It's just not going to happen. It's worthy of the discomfort of this, is all that I can say. It's worthy of it. And if I get to make mistakes along the way and course correct, fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to play it safe. Because we are at a critical crisis point. When I ran and I was campaigning, I felt like that there was time to make a difference. Mm-hmm. The time is ticking. And I am very, very concerned about the small businesses in our core and in the people who are on our streets and in the community surrounding them. There is a level of despair that is escalating to the point that I'm very concerned, because when people are desperate,
it's palpable. You can feel it. I don't dispute that.
And how can I ignore that? What do I do as the Ward 4 City Councilor? Go, oh, well, you know, we're just doing the best we can. Sorry. That's not who I am. I'm on the streets. People are crying. They're crying out for help. And I have a responsibility to be their voice And many of them are afraid to speak because of the bullies. And, well, just try to say something that goes against the narrative and you're canceled.
I don't know if anyone's been canceled. Who's been, like...
You
haven't been canceled. You're still a city politician.
Oh, come on. Look at all the code of conduct issues, all because of what?
Oh, you posting the photos of the...
I asked for help.
Yeah.
Help for these people. But there's the moral outrage that there's a photo. Where's the moral outrage that those people have to sleep on the street like that?
I think you can be angry about both those things. You know what I mean? Okay, fine.
Yeah, and fine enough. People can be angry. Good. Angry is better than silent on this issue.
So you have no regrets about the photo issue from September of last year as far as the identifiable people in those photos?
No one asked if I had consent for those photos. Mm-hmm. The people who were in the photos did not complain. Oh. It's other people who are outraged that I'm highlighting the tragedy in our city, the absolute tragic situation. The encampments that I recently posted are in a zero-tolerance municipal lot in an old East Village business district.
I don't dispute that.
That apparently the city is committed to supporting because it is a BIA and it received funding. Mm-hmm. Those are two contradictory responses.
I, to be clear, do not think that the ones from this week of the tent and the... is anything like what happened in September. I think that's an apples and oranges comparison if someone's saying that they're the same. I've got no problem with, hey, should there be a tent sitting here on Dundas? The answer to that is very clearly no.
But it isn't clear based on results.
Well, then you posted the picture of there was an encampment cleanup. So.
Yes, and the next day it was back again.
Okay.
Right? The next day it's right back again. We are spending a lot of time and money helping no one.
So where should the person who is in that encampment be able to go right now?
I want that answer. Yeah. Where is the hub? Where is the place that we would be in an outreach position taking people to? When I was in Alberta, they talked about the navigation centers where they take people and they get a meal, they get clothing, they get ID, they get support. Where is that? Where is that? We're a year and 2 months later. Could we not? We have COVID tents.
Yeah.
There isn't some sort of emergency center we can set up where we can take care of people?
I wish that was the case, too. And to be clear, I also think encampments are bad. I think they're bad whether they're in Old East Village, and I think they present a whole lot of dangers in a lot of cases, not every case, if they're by the river or wherever it is they are.
They are incredibly dangerous to the people in them. They are very vulnerable. They are the bad actors take advantage of that situation.
I fundamentally agree with that. And we're talking about bad actors who are sex traffickers, bad actors who are drug dealers. All sorts of different bad actors are drawn like moths to a flame to an encampment. Hard agree on that. And I wish that we could just have zero encampments tomorrow. That sounds amazing to me. I don't think we have the infrastructure to make that happen right now. I wish we did, but we don't. And that's the issue. Push for the infrastructure. Great. That sounds awesome to me. But I just don't think that we have it where we can just have no encampments tomorrow.
Okay.
That's what I'm frustrated by. And I think we're frustrated by the same thing there.
There's nowhere
for these people to go.
Okay. But they have spent a year working on an all-year, all-season encampment strategy. What if that year had been spent on figuring out a way to get people out of tents?
No.
We had the Bob Hayward Y. We could have housed 100 people this winter. And the people who are in charge of this told us there's nobody to run it.
Yeah. So
how is that acceptable?
When they say nobody to run it, as far as administration, as far as frontline staff,
we weren't given those
details.
Okay. But again, you've got a whole of committee response, 200 people, 70 organizations, and you can't make use of a building that could house 100 people from January to March or April or whatever it was. 100 people could have been inside and they just say, sorry, we can't do it. But we're working on the encampment strategy and research models and all kinds of other things. I don't have a lot of tolerance for that. It's not okay. And if you say it's not okay, then let's work on something. Let's work on the impossible. People donate millions of dollars.
Could the millions of dollars be used to staff that? Here's what I will say, I would agree with you, is we hear all the time that this is a crisis and time is of the essence and this is urgent. I agree with all those things. All those things are true. But if that's true, that means that we've got to be very aggressive in figuring out what's going on here. And I think that this has moved a little slowly. I think that they caught a bad break.
A little slowly.
A lot slowly. They caught a bad break with the encampment. No, not the encampment. Excuse me. The hub in Northwest London.
And that wasn't foreseeable, really?
Yeah. Oh, they screwed that up big time. They screwed that
really?
Up. Yeah. Yeah. And like whether it was city staff, whether CMHA, both. Maybe we could circle both there. That was a screw up, and it kind of made the whole thing look a little amateur hour. And now we're behind where we wanted to be even at this point. And our projection, our goal for where we wanted to be at this point, even that was a very, very light goal and not very aggressive goal.
I have said to the mayor and to others, take Old East Village and make it work. Make social services work within a business district. It's the perfect spot for it.
Okay.
The community is not opposed to helping the homeless at all.
In fact,
the contrary, but it's too much. Why not make that work so that I could be the flagship and see, you don't have anything to be worried about. This is how it can work. And then there'd be less anxiety around hubs coming to other areas. But instead, we're left with a firestorm there that nobody wants me to take pictures of or talk about. And we're supposed to, and we just shame everybody for not wanting it in their neighborhood. What is happening in Old East Village is not okay. It's not okay. Not for anybody there. And to say that, well, it's too much there, so everybody, every area of the city should feel a little bit of the pain. We'll just spread it out. That is not my answer.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we help people? And when we help people, everybody's good with that. Okay, there might be a few that just, you know, they're not up to standard or something. For the most part, though, people will welcome in people who are trying to make their life better.
I agree. Well,
I know there's always a few, right? There's always a few.
We got some real angry letters around here about stuff I said about the Northwest London hub.
Yeah,
but that's not
yeah.
Here
but I will champion that 100%, right? And that area could absolutely do it. I brought forward the Salvation Army does the recovery beds. And they did, I think it was something like 40 beds, mm-hmm. semi-private rooms, or private rooms, semi-private bathrooms. That was a place for people to go after detox if they've come out of a rehab residential for a month. And it was a spot for them to just be in a place of recovery. The cost was $450,000 a year for all of that. And I went and I said, look, why not just add this to your whole community response? Double your numbers, make it go from 12 million to 12.5. Double your numbers. I can get on board. There wasn't an interest for some reason. And I don't know why. There may be valid reasons. But I'm not seeing that commitment to the people who both need and deserve the support. All of the focus seems to be on the organizations who help. Now we need them. And I value them, but they should not be the center of this. The center should be on the people, and everything should be about helping those people.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We need the organizations. If you want to say the center is the people, that's fine, but it's got to essentially start with the organization because they're the ones that
are running the hub. But what's their commitment?
The
what is their commitment?
So the YOU hubs as an example. How do you feel about where we're at on this?
So I love YOU, and I think everybody does, and what they do is great, and absolutely youth should be our focus because the sooner we can get help, absolutely. But again, when I spoke to YOU when I first was elected and I was doing the tours, I heard that the city wasn't giving them an increase in funding. And that they had said, you know, we're not going to be able to operate. We're just going to have to shut down sooner or something because we're not going to keep working for this little bit of money. And I was mad at the city. I'm like, this is a great organization. You know, cost increase, why not give more money? And then all of a sudden the hubs come and there's all of this money. And so my concern around the hubs isn't YOU. Like, I'm sure they will do amazing things with the money. But the philosophy was drug use was allowed, recovery was not encouraged or not preferred over no treatment, and the cost was very, very high. And look what we have, right? 6 respite beds and 9 transitional beds. And when I asked at the quarterly update, they didn't have an answer on the 9. There was a few beds open, they said.
Mm-hmm.
So Yes, like I want to see lots happen there, but it gets to go under the same scrutiny that everything else does, because dollars are scarce and we need to know that we're doing the absolute best that we can with that money. And this idea that between a charity and the municipality is private makes no sense to me, because what could be private? If you're able to do things cheaper, faster, better, right. We want to share that, and they would want to.
Yeah, you'd agree with me, though, that YOU is an organization with a reputation for
absolutely
stretching the bucks. Like they're not being frivolous with.
Oh
the
yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. No, it's great. It's great, and I'm anxious to see what is done. But the numbers were still small. Let's be honest. 6 and 9,
yeah,
was a far cry from 25 to 35.
That's
right. And I didn't see a decrease in cost, but maybe that will be there.
Well, still a lot to figure out with Hubs. I did not think that you and I were going to talk for almost an hour, but we have. Okay. And you have a meeting to get to.
I do.
I've got things to do.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming in. This is a good conversation.
Yeah,
and obviously there's some places where we disagree, some places where we agree, but I'm glad that we could get everyone's
yes.
Takes out there. So
yes.
I appreciate it.
Yes, I appreciate it too. Thanks, Craig.
That's Susan Stevenson, Councillor for Ward 4 here in the City of London. And this is the end of the Craig Needles podcast for today. Have a fantastic week. We'll talk to you on Friday for the roundtable. The Craig Needles podcast, of course, is powered by our friends over at the Covent Garden Market and at Downtown London.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.